Well, again, welcome to you all. And before I go too far, I'd like to remind you that we have one more post-confession lecture on February the 13th, and that is from Dr. Van Vliet. He is going to be speaking about the beauty of our Reformed worship. But for this evening, I am happy that we can come together to speak again about the cannabis that we spoke about last week, or 2 weeks ago, when Dr. Shada addressed us. And he explained to us that cannabis is a highly addictive substance with few, if any, medical benefits. That gives us as Christians a responsibility as to how we deal with the use of the products of this plant. We all realize that prevention of an addiction is better than looking for a cure. But still, many of us have to admit that we are addicted in one way or another, more or less serious, either to substances or to devices that we have in our houses. And in all this, we have to first of all seek to serve the Lord as wanting to live for Him. To help us to deal with this, and especially in connection with the marijuana decision that the government made, we have asked Elisha House to help us out. And they told us that they had available Ms. Lynn Murray, and she is here this evening. She is coming to speak to us, and Lynn is a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology from McMaster, and along with that, she has a diploma on addictions counseling, and she has a number of counseling courses that she followed on long-distance education. She works a couple days a week in Elisha House, and she also is counseling people, ladies that come out of jail. I believe it's ladies, which that go from being incarcerated to a halfway home, Alan Osler home in Hamilton. And she's also counseling them so they can integrate into society again, correct? Okay, so welcome, Lynn. Good to see you, and we give you the floor. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi. Oh, that's kind of loud. Thank you for having me here this evening. I'll get right into it. I was thinking this is not the first time that the church has been having to sort out where they're going to stand with new laws. In the not-so-recent past, abortion laws and same-sex marriages have put the church in a position of defending their flocks from the negative impact of the ever-changing cultural movement away from God's sovereign rule. In these cases, most churches, and I'm pretty sure this is one of them, have stood in God's truth and not adapted to doctrine to become more politically correct. So the latest laws that have been changed are the cannabis laws, and we can't use the easy answer, it's not legal, to direct people who are tempted to go that way. Usually we'll say it's against the law, and God calls us to honor the law. Health Canada is slated to spend $100 million on awareness, public education, and surveillance over the next 6 years. This is so new, they have to see how this is going to work out. So if the government's putting this kind of money into looking into this and studying and promoting this topic, the church should be doing the same, and I'm glad you're doing this. As parents, educators, and counseling others, particularly youth, we all need to understand the sober facts around what is, what isn't legal or healthy. So we don't want to needlessly lose the respect of sincere questioners by complete lack of factual information. We want to do our homework, or we don't want to hyperinflate the medical or legal facts available to us. So before I address the spiritual issues involved, I'll briefly review the current legal and medical facts. There's many new uses being revealed of cannabis, and I know You might have talked about this with your Dr. Sharda. There's medical uses and recreational uses. So as a church, we have to consider our response as we look at the balance of walking in truth between the two ditches, the libertine ditch or the legalistic thinking. So we want to be walking and standing in the balance of truth. Libertine thinking, that's free thinking. And we see that there's some churches that will, you know, start to water down their doctrine to be politically correct or to not be so offensive. Or we don't want to be legalistic where there's no flexibility in us whatsoever. That's adhering excessively to law or formula. So balance would be able to stand in the biblical standard of sobriety, alertness, and integrity. Hebrews 10:25 says, "Encourage one another to discern the glory of God with all our might. We should ask, we should seek to understand, engage rather than forbid." We need to be careful not to make the same mistake that the church made in the past with alcohol, where we just, you know, excessive use, church discipline. Such firm prohibition policy, we should be more studying and trying to learn exactly how this person is seeking to use the marijuana. So, the arguments you will face in this current cultural battle for the mind can be grouped under the following headings. I'll do 3 points. First, we'll look at the legal, then we'll look at the emotional and physical, and lastly, we'll look at the heart issues. So what if it's legal? A lot of people will say, it's legal now. Nobody should have an issue with it. But what does the individual in Ontario feel about that? Legal doesn't necessarily mean that it's ethical, safe, moral, or that you're being a good example as a believer. We should not be taking cues for how we live our life from our culture, because we're led by the Spirit of the Lord. So that being said, I read a recent news article from Metrolinx, and they're in Toronto and Hamilton area, and they're telling their employees that they don't want them to be using cannabis either at work or in their private life. And they say that they're making the change for fitness because of the duty to for safety for their employees, the people who use the public transit, and the community. And the union of these workers is saying that they will go as far as take them to court because they're infringing on their constitutional rights. They're violating their private life. So even if the federal government makes it legal, the provinces are stuck with how to handle this. If you go through, each province has a different set of rules for cannabis. Some will say, oh, you can smoke it wherever smoking's permitted and in your private home. Some will say, no, you can only smoke it in your private homes. So each province is affected by this rule that they have made in a federal level, and they're all grasping. I spoke to the wife of a police officer, and I said, how does this affect, like, what does your husband think? And she said, they really didn't discuss this they didn't consider the laws and how this would affect the public. I know that a woman who works in the shelter, and she says that they're struggling because here comes a person in with cannabis, they store it in their locker, it has a really bad odor, and there's people in there that don't want to smoke it, but they're struggling with the smell of it or the presence of it. So it's really causing havoc even in a secular level, even if you don't consider the church. So it will differ from province to province where you can smoke or vape. And some provinces, in Ontario, you can smoke it in private residences, many outdoor public places, designated guest rooms or hotels. I don't know if smoking's still in hotels, but this is interesting, residential vehicles and boats. But if you get pulled over after smoking, you get charged with impaired driving. And so they have controlled areas in long-term care homes, certain retirement homes, residences and hospices, provincially funded supporting housing, and designated psychiatric facilities or veterans. But as Christians, we're subject to governing authorities. Romans 13:1-2 says, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. So if we strictly looked at this verse for guidance, every person in the room over the age of 18 would have the freedom, if their conscience allowed, to light up. Just the way we drink a cup of coffee, which is another psychoactive substance most of us drank today, and the source of our pot could be the four plants we're allowed to grow in the home, at least in Ontario. So our go-to verse to live under the governing authorities doesn't serve to deter people from smoking marijuana. If you think about this, though, if this was your go-to verse when somebody was talking about using drugs, it's a false refuge. It doesn't serve the heart. And it doesn't speak to the desire to seek refuge in something other than God. In 1 Corinthians 6:12-20, I'll read part of it. The Message Bible, I don't usually read that, but it has an interesting translation. Just because something is technically legal doesn't mean that it's spiritually appropriate. If I went around doing whatever I thought I could get by with, I'd be a slave to my whims. You know the old saying, first you eat to live, then you live to eat. Well, that may be true, that the body is only a temporary thing, but that's no excuse for stuffing your body with food or indulging in with sex. Since the master honors you with a body, honor him with your body. So I have the right to do anything, but not everything is beneficial for me. I have the right to do anything, but I am not to be mastered by anything other than God. If we look at the emotional and physical aspects, we find people in different areas in the stages of change. There's pre-contemplative and contemplative, and that's where they are open to direction or open to thinking of in a new direction. Contemplative using. The person might be wondering, since it's legal, it might be good for me. There's a lot of things that marijuana is being claimed to do now. Oh, it heals your pain, it heals your arthritis. There's a list, and I'm sure you heard it the last speaker. But it's not all it's cracked up to be. Dependency means that you're becoming increasingly involved. You're using it more and more. And sometimes we start off thinking that something, we can control something. It's okay to do it occasionally. But over time, you start to use it more and more often. Addiction is the stage you get to where you can't live without it. Steady, idolatrous worship of. Some of the things that you'll hear from people who want to use it is, it helps my anxiety. If we want to address this, we could ask, well, what's the difference between using marijuana and Ativan or benzodiazepine? When you want to choose anti-anxiety meds, there's many out there. Many people come into Elijah House and they suffer from anxiety. And there's some of the conversations we would have who are in the pre-contemplative or contemplative stage, this is where you can get proactive. This is where you can talk to somebody and before they make that decision to use. And John mentioned that earlier. Many people have justified their use of a drug. In Vietnam, a lot of heroin was available, and the soldiers used it. It helped to keep them in good spirits when they're fighting war. They're fighting for their life. And it kept them calm while they were in grave danger. When they returned home, they came back with an addiction. They would often go to treatment. 90% of them would stop using, while the other 10% couldn't stop. What they discovered was that the intention for using made the difference of whether they could stop. We choose a particular drug for a reason. Often, if one is in a hypoarousal state, that's like a depressive state, you would choose an upper like cocaine, something that stimulates you, something that makes you feel powerful and alive. Someone whose normal state is hyperarousal, where they're always hyped up, they have ADHD, or they would use a drug like marijuana to calm them down. And they would want to chill. That's when most people use marijuana. Oftentimes, people aren't using a drug to get high so much as to feel normal. I was raised in a traumatic environment, and I was in survival mode most of my childhood. And when I got out on my own, and I wasn't living under that, I didn't know how to feel normal. I was kind of in a shut-down, depressive state. So I wanted to get away from feeling depressed and powerless. So I was drawn towards cocaine. I felt like that was the wonder drug. It made me feel alive, alert, and powerful. And at first, I felt like I was in control, that I wasn't going to get addicted. This just helped me in certain times, certain social instances. And coming off was horrible. Sometimes I'd be up for days, and I would use marijuana to help me sleep. So that was, you know, you're coming up here, and then you're trying to get back down. But usually when we begin with a substance, like I said earlier, we feel like we're in control. In AA, they have a saying, first the dog wags the tail, then the tail wags the dog. First we eat to live, then we live to eat. Eventually that substance will take control of us. So when we entertain the lure, the illusion of false promise, we move from dependence to tolerance to addiction. Oftentimes when we overload our brain, our senses, the overload of supply will shut down the production of the chemical. Our brains produce chemicals, serotonin and dopamine, and usually we're chasing after something we already have. So if a person is looking for a chemical effect and they're using marijuana, long after the marijuana is gone, the brain stops supplying. And when they're gone, the user feels depressed, anxious, even paranoid. And they may have trouble sleeping. And marijuana gives you an illusion of insight. You always think you're thinking really deep thoughts. But then you recognize the meaninglessness of false wisdom. In the case of marijuana, usually people use it because they say, oh, I just need to chill. The goal is to sit on the couch eating munchies with your TV remote. But a steady diet of marijuana dulls individuals into a long term of slow, subtle numbness. To understand why somebody's using, we have to enter into their world. We have to seek to understand. And engaging them in questions and getting to know them will help you understand where a person's coming from, instead of having just a this is wrong, this is right, legalistic approach. Enter into that person's world. A good book to read is Banquet of the Grave. Ed Welch wrote it. So some of the effects of marijuana, they range from person to potency. Christian Hopfer, he's an MD in Colorado, and he said the more marijuana you use and the longer you use it, the more THC it contains, the more effects you'll feel. So in the short term, marijuana can affect your ability to think and solve problems, your coordination, your reaction time, your judgment, your memory, and your mood. Over the long term, regular use can lead to memory loss, trouble learning and thinking, changes in the brain structure, trouble at work or in school, and impulsive behavior. And in young people, the effects are even more damaging. There's a higher risk in people who's, because in young people, their brains are developing till they're 25. So if you're using regularly, there's a whole host of problems that can occur. And a lot of times with the young people, they believe it's safe. They think it's harmless. And especially when the government endorses it. You have the Prime Minister of Canada saying, I'll legalize it. And he's being cheered and applauded. Regular marijuana in teen years has been linked to lower IQ, changes to areas of the brain involved with learning, memory, and attention. Just when they need it the most, when they're in school. Anxiety, depression, and other mental health problems, they drop out of school. And if they even go to college, they have worse performance. When you think of the circles that we live in, you often probably don't know people who smoke marijuana as recreational. You might know somebody who's taking it medicinally nowadays. You often have that picture in your mind of people off in a corner somewhere smoking a joint or a spliff, a small group of people. People that you wouldn't really associate with or be in their company. But that's not the only way to consume it. There's different ways you can take it. Smoking's the common way. If you smoke from a joint, a pipe, or a bong, this is good language for you to learn if you have young kids in the home. You want to know what they're up to. The heat releases active chemicals from the plant into the smoke, and then you breathe it in. And marijuana comes in other forms. There's the vape. It's similar to an e-cigarette. And the vaporizer heats up the dried marijuana and releases a vapor. And this vapor contains THC and other cannabinoids, but without the toxic smoke. It's unknown if this method is more harmful to the lungs than smoking it. Dabbing is another method. And this is a newer delivery. You heat up and breathe concentrated cannabis oils. And it contains up to 80% THC. And the dabbing produces a very strong high. And its safety is still unknown. The other is, and I'm sure some of you have heard about, you know, the brownies, the edibles. And now you can buy little packets of candy. It's baked into foods like cookies or brownies. You can take it by mouth as an oil, a capsule, which might be a more civilized way of taking it. The problem with this is when you, usually if you're smoking it, you feel the high right away. And it's inhaled, it's very rapid. Because edibles, you don't really feel anything, so you just keep taking them and you go, I don't feel anything. I haven't done this, by the way, but I've studied it, and you take some more, and then you take some more, because you're not feeling it, and next thing you know, because it's slow acting, and then you're in trouble. It's dangerously high levels of THC when you do it that way. So you don't really picture people eating it in their food, but... And safety. I mean, earlier on it said that you could smoke it in a vehicle, but when you're driving on marijuana, and now they are going to fine you for that, the same as they do for alcohol. When you're driving, your judgment, your motor skills, your reaction time, and your perception are altered. And your risk of getting into an accident goes up significantly. It affects you like alcohol does, but you make different errors. If you're driving and drinking, you might neglect to check your mirrors or drive over the speed limit. With marijuana, you drive slow and really cautiously. With alcohol, you might run through a red light. With marijuana, you'll stop at a green light because you don't realize how you think you're driving very carefully. And thirdly, if we look at the heart issues, what is the heart that drives the person who wants to use this substance? Oftentimes, what we choose in our minds our minds will justify. No matter what one wants to use to mood alter, the substance usually mimics a natural chemical in our body that we want more of. What we're essentially saying is that the great physician is not enough for what we need. You, Lord, are not enough for me, and I'm going to be my own doctor. Some of the arguments you might hear is, So you drink, I smoke pot. What's the difference? It's a plant that God gifted us with. Where in the Bible does it say that I can't smoke marijuana? You may hear Genesis 1:29. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. And they probably won't quote the last part that says, they will be yours for food. Jeff Lansing is a pastor in Colorado. And he used to smoke pot every day. And he wrote this article addressing the church. What's the church going to say when people want to smoke? And he said, quick pat answers to the question of recreational cannabis use are often unhelpful. Responses without nuance will not best serve the church. In the long run, to say that alcohol is permissible and cannabis is not, because Christians drink beer and wine for taste, but people only smoke pot to get stoned, just won't do. Such simplification distorts the truth. For one, Christians don't drink beer and wine only for the taste. Even moderate drinking, which is biblically permissible, has lubricating psychoactive effects. From a biblical perspective, this lubricating effect can be acceptable, while drunkenness is clearly prohibited. God has given wine to gladden the heart of man. However, evangelical churches sometimes have prohibited the use of alcohol among members because the Bible forbids drunkenness. This is a mistake. The Bible warns us against such extra-biblical prohibitions. Scripture permits the moderate use of alcohol when it can be enjoyed in faith, even though it has psychoactive effects. Does God then also permit recreational use of cannabis? Should we treat cannabis like alcohol in the church? Is it okay to light up around the campfire just like it might be to enjoy wine at a wedding? There's similarities and dissimilarities between them. So if we compare alcohol and cannabis, the way cannabis is like alcohol, cannabis is an organic substance. It has the potential to intoxicate and distort reality. It has different effects on someone who uses it regularly than someone who uses it occasionally. In other words, tolerances can be built up in either. And it's also, both can be habit forming. The ways that cannabis is not like alcohol, you can't black out or die from an overdose of cannabis. There's many different strains, and the different strains can have different effects. Many has different effects on an individual due to its complex chemical makeup. Inside the cannabis plant that combine a cause of variety effects on the individual when smoked or ingested. And cannabis has not been a staple like alcohol in the cultures around the world. And its use has been strongly correlated with mental health disorders such as schizoaffective disorder. While heavy drinking has also been linked to mental health disorders, moderate drinking has not. And cannabis has been a cultural symbol of rebellion for a large part of the last century. And And unlike alcohol, cannabis is not directly addressed in the Bible. When somebody says, where in the Bible does it say, I can't smoke marijuana? We're hard-pressed to come up with one. So it is unhelpful to make direct correlations between cannabis and alcohol. Not only are cannabis and alcohol vastly different, they have different effects. But while the Bible gives us clear, direct permission for moderate use of alcohol, never referencing other psychoactive compounds such as marijuana, the Christian's use of any kind of psychoactive substance should always align with the gospel goal of looking to see things clearer. We want our vision of reality. We do not want our vision of reality distorted. 1 Peter 5:18 talks about being sober-minded, being watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. 1 Timothy 4 tells us to stay on the alert. Our goal is to pursue clear vision, not muddy our brains. So how do we minister to someone who wants to use marijuana? Initially, before we minister to others, we have to do our own heart work. Oftentimes, it's our own discomfort and our own values that cause us to confront someone. If marijuana is totally foreign to your world, you might be intimidated by someone you know who's using it. God always calls us to examine our own hearts before we attempt to look into the heart of another. In other words, a person smoking marijuana may not have an issue with it. They may not see it as sin, they may not be convicted. And if they're not using it at church or church functions, and it doesn't affect their work or their relationships, how or why would we enter in? So I guess what I'm getting at is, where does it become an issue where the church has to step in? We often don't approach the person who's had a few drinks on his night off until it becomes an issue or a problem. So why would we approach the person who's using marijuana until or before it becomes a problem? But when it does, and it inevitably will, become a problem, how do we step in? Overuse of cocaine, heroin, and alcohol, they have more short-term consequences. Marijuana is more slow and insidious, which is why an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is where you want to get before they start using regularly. The person using marijuana over long periods of time won't see the effects, but everybody around them will. They're like the frog that you put into cold water and you turn up the heat. They don't jump out because they don't notice the water's getting hotter and hotter. Jeff Lacine again said, even though cannabis is never directly mentioned in the Bible, we do have God-revealed principles to guide and direct our thinking about its recreational use. We often get help on specific questions when we keep our eyes on the big picture. What is the end game for Christian life? What should we be aiming at in all things? The Christian use of any substance should align with the goal of looking to see things clearer. In conclusion, if we want to approach someone or you know somebody who's using it, you want to know what you're talking about, do your homework, research, not give pat answers or blanket statements. We want to enter into the individual's world. We want to find out why they want to use. What is the heart that's driving? What do they hope to get from it? If they suffer from anxiety or some other diagnosis, why choose cannabis rather than other prescribed meds? Have they gone to the Lord? Where is God in your usage? Prayer, meditation, exercise, fellowship, nature, and music all feed the spirit and produce endorphins. Those are the things that we would often look for in a drug. And we live in a society that is constantly looking for the quick fix. There's more diagnoses out there than ever before. And really, what we're looking for is that feel-good feeling. There's something in us that believes that we should never feel bad. I'm feeling down, I need to pick myself up. We're living in a broken world and we're broken people. And we're going to hurt one another, we're going to go through suffering. There's diseases, there's horrible weather, there's so much out there that's going to interfere with ours. We don't deserve life with no downs. Do we understand our Heavenly Father as the great physician? And even if we do have a diagnosis, is that a license to do as we see fit? Because God calls us to honor Him no matter what our circumstances are.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Lynn. And I'll first give the floor to people if they want to ask something. I know one of the big things that's going on now is among especially teenagers is the vaping. And I don't know whether parents are aware that vaping has more danger to it than we think. Am I correct, Lynn? The vaping that kids do, and for instance, I hear some of the kids on the buses try to vape because they say, well, you're not allowed to smoke when I'm vaping. Can that be as addictive as something else?
Yeah, I believe so. They don't really know what vaping has in it yet. They're still trying to... I mean, I have cousins and that who quit smoking and now they're vaping. And I said, but what's in that? Well, it's just nicotine. And I said, but what else is in that? Well, I don't know. Yeah. So you really don't know what you're taking. And it's so new that they haven't done all the studies. I mean... It took a while for them to tell you what cigarettes do to you.
Yeah. Now, if you were talking to, from what you're saying here, it's most important that we keep this stuff away from young kids. Mm-hmm. So if you were talking to a classroom full of kids of say, grade fives, should we start with them? And how would you address it?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good question. That's a tough question, but that is smart to start. I mean, they're talking to kids about all kinds of things at young ages, and they often just tell them, they give them more choices, and it would be really good for people to talk to the kids about what that's going to do to your brain. I don't know if it's a big deterrent, but... looking at the fact that any kid under 25, their brain's developing and they're introducing these things that alter their brain chemicals. and they're noticing that they don't do well in their studies. So if they're ambitious and they desire to go places in their studies, marijuana is just going to hold you back.
Somebody else. Don't be shy. I can't do all the questioning for you. It seems to me that what you just said, people want a quick fix. So it seems to be an attitude problem within the society. We are a selfish society. We want a quick fix. I would almost think that would have something to do with it. Am I out on that one?
Yeah.
It's an attitude. So I would think if you start talking to young kids, you would try to teach them to have the proper attitude in life towards each other, towards the Lord, and towards their body.
Mm-hmm. They're saying that...
No, I'm not a counselor. You tell me.
teach the kids to be... It's okay to be bored. It's okay to be a little down. Where do we go when we're... Teach them how to deal with emotions in a healthy way, because then they don't, when they get older, they don't look for things to try and fix how I'm feeling.
Yeah. Anybody? Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you have ever heard or seen anything happen with respect to trying to help people who are addicted to marijuana. If you have alcoholics, sometimes organizations like Family Outreach will organize or try to organize, you can call them confrontation sessions. I know there's not agreement about how good that is, but is anything like that done with respect to those who are addicted to marijuana who themselves don't even see the effects it's having?
You mean like interventions or?
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't came across that. Often marijuana gets played down like as it's not that bad. People often addicted to marijuana don't think it's a big issue. They often won't seek help for it. I mean, maybe there are some, but I've never come across it. Usually in the treatment centers, it's the harder drugs. I did once see one person who was in there for marijuana, actually, now that I think about it. And everybody who was in there thought, like, why are you in here? You know, marijuana is considered a very low addiction in society.
Is marijuana still considered kind of like a gateway drug to the harder stuff because its effect wears off and then they want something bigger and better?
It can be. There's a lot of people who have smoked. I've known people who smoked it since they were young and they never moved on to other drugs. I mean, it is a gateway. I mean, you do open yourself up. I've had these conversations with teenagers. You might not think marijuana is that serious, it's not a big deal, but then you open the door for somebody to offer you something else, whereas if you're not involved with any of it, nobody's going to tempt you, nobody's going to approach you. It is a gateway drug.
Okay, Fred?
I wonder if you can inform us a little bit more about vaping. Young people seem to downplay the adverse effects of that. Is there a spectrum of different types of stuff that you put in that vaporizer?
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about it. I know that there's different flavors. So they do, a lot of the vaping that I've seen is, I'm from Scotland, I go back there often, and I'm with my cousins, and they're all doing it. And they're saying, here, try this, it's Iron Brew. Or here, it's all these different flavors. They cater just like before when they used to make the cigarette packages like attractive to young people, they were doing the same with vapor. It's different. You can get Coca-Cola flavors and that, but nobody knows what's in them apart from nicotine. Did I answer that question? Sort of.
I think the big thing with vaping is that people don't know so much what they inhaling, but they know that they don't get the tar that they get from smoking. And that is the advertisement. That seems to be what people say is, at least you don't get the tar. For the rest, I don't think it's regulated, is it, Alain?
No, there's 400 chemicals in a cigarette. And so what they're saying is, you're just getting the straight nicotine, but there's more stuff in there that they're not talking about yet that I don't know. I mean, I maybe look that up. Now I'll be looking that up because I'm interested.
Okay. Yeah.
Lynn, you mentioned a beautiful list of things that you could do to help yourself. It started with prayer and meditation. I think singing was included. Can you repeat that list?
Sure. Did I slide that? Prayer, meditation, exercise, fellowship, nature, and music. And those are things that we often just, people are always looking, like I said before, for something quick. And oftentimes, I believe, I know from my own life, God made me do the disciplines. It wasn't, you're healed, it's over, or take this pill, you'll feel better. It was, and I was offered them. Doctors will offer you pills. Oh, just take this. They'll offer them really easy. But I found with my own life, I had to go through the slow disciplines of, you know, maybe feeling uncomfortable for a little while and asking God to get me through it. And over time, it got easier and there was less discomfort. And sometimes when you're dealing and you're walking alongside somebody, they'll say things like, well, I feel so horrible. I just need something. I can't stand this feeling. And it's hard to walk them through it, but, you know, take a walk. Go for a walk with somebody who's dying for a substance. Take them to an exercise class. Those are things that naturally release endorphins in our brain. Walking in the woods, praying, and just even having fellowship. You know, sometimes some of our walks in life, the difficult ones, feel so lonely. But at times when you're walking through with somebody, they'll remember that person who walked beside them. They won't necessarily remember what you said to them, but they'll remember your presence.
In that light, I remember one of our ministers telling us once there was a terrible, difficult case you had to visit, and you don't know what to say as an elder. So you go there and you sit there with your mouth full of teeth, more or less. You try to say something that is comforting. The minister says the next day to me, he said, well, it's not the fact what you say, the fact that you're there in the first place. And I think we have to learn that too. Sometimes sitting beside somebody and not saying anything might do a whole lot of good. I remember our local doctor here in Smithville, Dr. Comley, many of you probably know him. I know one case that he was involved with a tragic accident where I knew about too, and I went with him. And all the man did is sat beside people. He just sat there quietly. And finally he says, well, what can I do for you? And then he offered medical help, but he was just there as a presence. And you could feel that it helped. And it was a wonderful way of doing it. As a matter of fact, a man talked me better one time. And it was not from an addiction, but there were some problems, and I couldn't hack things, and he talked me better. So communication with somebody that you can trust is a big thing. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to talk here instead of asking, but anyway. Anybody else? Yes.
Listening to both evenings from the doctor and from yourself, can we look forward to a whole bunch of zombies down the road? Well, because it's bad enough now, people not using their brains. Mm-hmm. If you're going to screw them up like that and fry them, is this going to happen? And this is legal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, who knows what it's going to look like a few years from now. I really believe that the money, the taxes, was a big lure for this legalization. I don't really think they thought it through the effects. And so teaching your kids to not blindly accept what the government says, I said earlier, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's safe or it's moral or it's ethical or it's good for you. And we're allowed to do anything that God gives us, but is it necessarily good for us? And I think teaching your kids that is really important.
Wait a minute. We've got people online that would like to hear it too.
No, I don't. I'm not sure if people really understand that. I hear always the comparisons between alcohol and marijuana, you know, the choice of recreational, alcohol, drunkenness, and marijuana as being high. But when it comes towards the part where it gets becoming addictions, those that are alcoholics are not chasing the drunk. There's something else there that they're fighting to get, knowing that when they crash pretty hard. Marijuana's a little different. it's a trip. It's a vacation without leaving the farm, basically. And it comes down kind of quietly. And people try to hide from things that allow themselves with marijuana. But the other issue is that being at recreational by law, I work under a federally regulated company. There's zero tolerance to narcotics, and that means marijuana too. And when I mean zero tolerance, we get randomly tested, which in Canada, it's illegal if you work at a provincial company because of the Privacy Act we have here, for now. But in my case, I'm under the federal rules, and we get regularly tested. Urine tests, and a trace of marijuana is in there, that person is banned from doing what he's paid to do for the next 28 days. And then he gets tested again. And if it's in there again, it's another 14 days. And then they get tested again. And if they're clear, they get tested once a month randomly for 6 months with the humiliation of a witness watching him urinate in a bottle so he doesn't cheat. That is a cost, a huge cost, that people are not realizing that a Saturday night high, Monday morning urine test could cost you 2 months worth of wages and a lot of income and a lot of downtime. And that's all because of having a joint, which in a drink, 12 hours later, on a normal evening, you'll be fine. That's the way the law writes as now. And it hasn't changed yet since Canada has made it into a legal recreational thing. But as you heard, as you mentioned earlier regarding some companies like the Metrolinx, that's because of the public safety factor. I'm not sure how that's going to go because those laws has to be changed in Canada to protect the public because that is what's going to happen. Either they're going to keep that zero tolerance and then those that are into that ruling, there's a huge loss of income involved there.
Yeah, I understand. I agree with you because they made it legal, like I said, at that federal level, but they didn't think all the little nuances of that law. I mean, the police are walking around going, well, I don't know, do I arrest them, do I not? Companies like Metrolinx are saying, well, we can't have people using it. It dulls their senses. And then they're driving our trains and our buses. And the community's at risk. I mean, I don't think they thought it through. They didn't plan right down to the details.
Okay, is there somebody else that would like to ask something? Oh.
I'm not sure how to say this, but how can we walk alongside someone, a friend or a brother or whoever, who's in this addiction when we see this is happening and it goes further and further and everybody knows about it, everybody's talking about that person and saying, oh, that's so sad, that's so terrible, but we can talk to the parents and they recognize it and they're trying their best. How can we as friends or parents reach out to our children and our friends in a positive manner? And I know all the things that you have said, and I know that, but how do we walk alongside of them when some we don't know as well, or we're at our wit's end, we don't know where to go anymore?
Without knowing like a little more, like if it's somebody close to you or a friend, or somebody close to you, have that conversation. Is it a young person? Yeah. How old? I mean, if you have, what I recognize from the work that I do is, and even before I did it, is building relationship with people. Currency gives you currency to speak into their life. Oftentimes, if the person doesn't think it's an issue, you're not going to convince them. I mean, unless there's natural consequences where people say, well, if you're using, you know, I'm not going to be in your presence, or sometimes you have to make your own boundaries be the consequences to kind of give them a wake up. If they don't think that they're using substances is an issue, they're not asking for your help, they don't want it, they're not interested in changing, you just have to let them go until the consequences become enough that they start to wake up. But having the conversation with your concerns, I mean, if you have that kind of relationship with them, yeah, do so. First go to them by yourself, then take one person with you.
Okay. Okay. We have room for some more questions.
You mentioned, excuse me, dabbing. I'm not familiar with that. I'm just wondering if you can explain that a little bit more.
I wasn't familiar with it either. When I was preparing for this, I came across it, and I guess it's putting the oil and then heating it and then inhaling the fumes. And I guess it's like 80% THC that you're getting. So it's a more potent inhale that you're doing.
Okay.
I hope I'm not giving anybody instructions here to try things.
Yeah. don't want to cut anybody off, but I don't want to stand here for 10 minutes either, so. If there are no more, then thanks a lot for your presentation, Lynn. I don't think it's your professional job to do this all the time, so you went out of your way to do it. Thank you for also your counseling work that you do to some people in this area, undoubtedly also. Before we're going to close, Reverend von Woodenberg will close with us, and he will also tell us a little bit about how the church at work with the counseling services. So, Reverend von Woodenberg, could you then... I'm not asking him for a long speech on the end, but it's good that we are aware of what is available. And then he will close with us, and before that, I'll tell you what we'll sing.
Thank you. What's available to the church as far as counseling services, we can be very thankful. We have our speaker here this evening. Thank you very much for that. Locally, we have Elisha House, which has quite a number of counselors. I'm not sure how many are there right now. Five or six at Elisha House. There's also Christian Counseling Center. I'm a bit more familiar with that as I serve on the board there right now. Quite a few counselors available there as well. There's also one that I came across recently, is South Niagara Life Ministries. You're probably familiar with that one too, I imagine. I think they're quite closely connected. I can say I'm a minister of the church in Dunville. We're very thankful that we have all these different organizations around to which we can go to for a referral, we can go to for advice, we can suggest people go there. And we're thankful that we can work with each one of them, also knowing their stance on the Reformed faith, how they work with office bearers. Different churches have different packages at times too. I know the church that I'm at, we have subscribed to the package from Christian Counseling Center, whereby all members have available to them a number of hours of counseling per year, or sessions of counseling per year. And then they can simply state that they're members of Dunville Canadian Reformed Church, and then the deacons do pay for that. There's different packages available, which to each congregation, you can customize them. And I know the one that I'm involved in, the deacons there, we have a package where up to 5 sessions, I believe, and they can go either to Elisha House or to Christian Counseling Center. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Fulmer, for explaining that to us. I suggest that we sing yet in closing Psalm 141, the first four stanzas that talks about saving from sin, and my heart wrong, not to wrong incite me, and also that let good men, when I am transgressing, rebuke me, strike me, punish me. So that is points to us also to the task of the communion of saints. So 141, 1, 2, 3, and 4.